Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. New guys as well. It's over, lads. Restaurant last night. Inexplicable lateness tonight. We had a good run. My God, can I be late 5 minutes per year, please? In fact, I'm late today for no reason at all, other than I was browsing the news, relaxing, preparing for the show, and I look at the time and... at the time it was already 59. It was 6:59. Somehow I didn't see the time pass. But yeah, I did go to the restaurant yesterday. That was very enjoyable. Although I arrived late there, so I had to eat quickly because they were closing the kitchen. But it's a good sushi restaurant. It's good to remember the days when I cared about eating good food and tasting everything in the world. I don't really care anymore, but sometimes it's good to remind yourself as an old man. There is fear around volcanoes. Let's see the volcano that was blowing in Iceland. So apparently those are kind of earthquake-like activities related to the volcano. Wow, the plates are shaking in the kitchen. All right, and CNN is also onto the volcano fear stuff. Be prepared for all outcomes inside the saga of a super volcano that's waking up. This time it's in Italy. They say it's even more dangerous than the Mount Vesuvius and the one that blew up during a few years ago. They are talking about the possibility of a volcano that would put a pause on our airplane activities in the region. Let me tell you, it's going very well. The markets are going well. A new guy says, be afraid by my news. Yeah, I think it's a little bit what they do. And there was a Project Veritas release where we were learning that fear around climate and natural events is the next direction of CNN. I think that they've entered that part of their activity. Jen et al. I don't know what you're talking about. Here, I'm going to remove your chat. What the fuck are you talking about? Wow, someone slides and jumps into the water. Let's have a look. Well, that is quite the jump. You don't want to bump on a brick wall accidentally because that is relatively high speed. I'm feeling great because, my God, crypto is going well, and it's going well across dimensions. Bitcoin going well, ETH above 2000. I was super well placed for enjoying every bit of this. That is so great to feel prepared. And we were talking on the Discord today about those people who didn't prepare. And they are reactive. They are seeing the current rise and they're like, oh, I have to buy Bitcoin now. No, you had to buy Bitcoin a little bit before the rise happened. When Papa JF told you to buy Bitcoin. DK Shadow says, Xen is up, 50% pump. Okay, I don't know what that is, this crypto. And Steven Robinson says, Hex is well good. Okay, I haven't looked at X for a while, but I'm happy if it's doing well. I mean, there's going to have to be a peak for X in this bull run too. And hopefully Steven Robinson can recover his balls deep investment. I always think about the time where I asked Steven Robinson, how much X do you have? Are you committed to X? And he's like, I am balls deep into X, JF. Well, you know, why not? Why not in the current bull run? Wouldn't we see a hex that surpasses the past peaks? I think it makes sense. And it all depends on... I think that the SEC is being perceived as much less powerful than it used to. The fears of the SEC have been dampened because their successes are limited in court. And I think that this will reflect very well on the hex. T.S. Apostolos has been loading up each paycheck since 24K this summer. Ah, that is great. That is the attitude. You just, whatever you have extra in the week, in the month, whenever you get paid, you pour it into crypto. And now is the time to sit back and enjoy for me. Will I pour more? Yes, probably, because I'm making a lot of money out of contract work. And when that money arrives, I don't really need it. So much of it will go into crypto as we get into the rise. Former NFL star Earl Thomas' ex-wife and her new boyfriend reportedly steal $1.9 million after stealing Earl Thomas' identity. Oh my God. It's such a problem to have these troublemakers around you when you try to get rich. And they always fuck up. They always do dirty stuff. It's a big problem for crypto. Like, can you even trust your wife? That is the great question that is brought by the availability of crypto. While I was gone yesterday, and in the last few days, I believe it's not even from yesterday, but it's something I would have talked about yesterday. A star has risen on social media. This guy, who is an American / Panama citizen, it's an event that happened in Panama, but he rose as a meme on the internet as the tired white guy who just shoots the climate activist because they're getting in the way. A very interesting story. I can't show the video because they've removed the video from social media. Look at this. Yesterday, I was able to look at the video, but today we can't. So what is there to say about this guy? Well, first, what a capture of a photo. Yes. When the picture is, this is a bullet shot that killed someone, you know, and he delivered it, very quick and in kind of a psychopathic manner. Kind of, you know, in these movies where you have a kind of psychopathic criminal type of personality who's talking with someone and he's like, he shoots someone random on the side, like, oh yeah. So that is how it happened. Basically, this guy was stopped on the road. He walked to the climate activist. Now, there is much more to the story that have been revealed by other tweeters. We'll get to it. But generally, the story was, okay, this guy is stopped on the road. He goes to the climate activist, tells them to get out, pushes them away. And those who still stand there, he shot them. Those who refuse to remove themselves, he removed them physically. And yes, the... You know, this is a shot that killed someone, and you can see the bullet casing being expelled, and it kind of arrives around his hair. And you can see the kind of psychopathic, I refuse to feel empathy for what I'm about to do. This is the kind of cold-blooded attitude that is necessary to survive in certain situations, but that in modern society is looked from above. But then there's more. It seems that it's not just a random climate activist being shot story, because this guy is a liar. Apparently, he's involved in the company of mining that is benefiting from this new political rule in Panama that allows a Canadian mining company to have access to any reserves of copper in nature, independent from whether someone owns the land. So basically, the copper that exists naturally in Panama has been purchased by a mining company. The political class has been purchased so that they would all hand it to the mining company, and to the point of denying the property rights of other people. In other words, they have been given full carte blanche with respect to mining copper anywhere in Panama. And it seems that this guy is a liar who is both an American citizen and a Panama citizen, who has been working in that lobby, who has been working for this company. And the protesters are said not to be just random, you know, stop oil protester. It seems that it's a very society-wide agreement that there is, that this is a betrayal from the Panama political class to have allowed this rule. Okay, that's all interesting. Now, it doesn't change. Was this guy motivated by his corporate position? Or was he just pissed at protest of that sort in general? As I've reminded on my Twitter account, when you block a road, as far as I'm concerned, you are kidnapping people on one side of the road and on the other side of the road. You are restricting their movement. You are controlling where they can be. And therefore, you are kidnapping them into a cage that is the size of half of planet Earth. DK Shadow says, psychopathic liar for a psychopathic political class. Yeah, so it's all interesting detail, but in the end, I don't know if the corporate thing here really constitutes the reason why he shot them, because it does seem that he shoots them from a very proximal perspective, from a very, hey, I'm tired that you guys are in the way and you guys are refusing to get out of the way, so I'm shooting you. You know, it's a case of falling down. It's a case of the white man has had enough, and it's an interesting story. I don't have a strong position on it. Why Black Bear says, someone said 150K missed medical appointments because of this type of protest in Panama. Okay, so it seems like a regular thing that is disrupting society, which is what they want to do. Stephen Robinson says, state of emergency declared in Grindavík, Iceland. Civil defense has decided to evacuate the town. Well, I just showed at the beginning of the show videos of this volcano activity. Perhaps it's getting graver since. Happened on the Brooklyn subway. A Jewish person in an altercation with a black man. I don't know who starts it, because at the moment the video starts, you'll see the black man right away spitting in the face of the other. But there probably were events before this camera started. So directly spit in the face of the man who apparently is putting his hand to delay the closing of the train. Now, this is a move that is against the rules. You cannot impose yourself to stop the train from leaving on a regular schedule. And so in a way, perhaps the black man had it in mind to impose a state of contract where you have to follow the rule, because if you delay the train to enter, then everyone in the train is delayed. And so the spitting might have been a form of imposition of the law in this particular case. Suck my dick. Now, the whole thing is presented as a Jewish man gets assaulted in the metro. I don't know, how do you know that he's Jewish? And was this fight really caused by the fact that he was Jewish or the fact that he delayed the train? All right, very hard to determine who initiated all of this. There is discussion going on the internet about video that shows the activity of IDF soldiers as they bombard people on the ground from helicopters. Helicopter footage sparks debate over Israeli friendly fire incidents. So, as one major Israeli newspaper strongly suggests, it shows helicopter footage of Israeli forces firing indiscriminately on civilians approximately an hour after the onset of the Hamas terror attack on October 7th. And so those are events that were captured and published by the Israeli side. And it's supposed to be the Israeli helicopter shooting at Hamas terrorists. But people have been raising the question here of just how many of those October 7th death of Israeli civilians are to be attributed to the chaotic response of the IDF. New guy says IDF confirmed killing civilians in Israel after Hamas attacks. So that's the kind of video we see here. So it's like just a bunch of cars. Do you know that they are Hamas terrorists at the moment you shoot them? Now, there is a factual disagreement on what these videos are showing. Lord Bibo is on the case on Twitter. He's been receiving a community note because his original claim was those are IDF helicopters shooting civilians, shooting Israeli civilians. And the community note says, this is IDF versus Hamas. This video is from October 9th. And shows Israeli AH-64 Apache attack helicopter engaging Hamas militants with 30mm chain gun fire and Hellfire missiles. Okay, so here we have a claim this has not been filmed on October 7th. But Lord Bibo responds to the community note. He says, the article that was released with the video describes it to be the 7th of October and as an attack on the murderous mob, not the 9th. And when you look at these segments of the article, they describe using attack helicopters on October 7th to combat the arrival of terrorists from Gaza. A decision was made that the first task of the combat helicopters and the armed Zig drones was to stop the flow of terrorists and the murderous mob that poured into Israeli territory through the gaps in the fence. The air activity on the first day was not organized. So that seems like an acknowledgement that whether the particular videos we're looking at are from October 7th or October 9th, these segments of text seem to be admissions on the Israeli side that there has been disorganized, chaotic air activity, that is basically helicopters and drones shooting people. So whether the particular videos come from October 7th or October 9th, the question is still raised by all of this, which is how much of the so-called 1,400 Israeli casualties or whatever the count is now, how many of those are friendly fire incidents from the chaotic response on the IDF side? That is a serious question. And so I'm not going to take a final take on whether the videos are from October 7th and 9th. I see the two claims. Lord Bibo on his side, you know, does not have the ability to read in Israeli. I've been following his Twitter account. So he's relying on other people to translate the material that's in Hebrew. So maybe he got something wrong, but maybe he got something right. And certainly the segments of text I see there seem like an admission that there was air activity that was supposedly directed against Hamas on October 7th. Unless this gets demonstrated to be false statements or bad Israeli coverage, I would tend to believe that there has been bombarding of people on the ground by air forces. New guy says, Silver Spider, I suspect it's the neocons and evangelicals pushing IDF innocence, but I'm not sure. Oh, there is so much efforts to... Hebrew. Yeah, you're right. It's not Hebrew. It's the thing is, I was trying to think of the word in French in my mind, and it's Hebrew. And the kind of U of the French kind of penetrated my English brain. Hebrew. That would be the word in English. Yeah, there is so much misinformation going on and so much combat on the public space to gain control over how things are represented in this war. We have three IOF soldiers injured in a kamikaze drone attack by Hezbollah. We can see here the IDF soldiers being brought to the hospital, perhaps dead at this point, some of them. So that would be an entry of Hezbollah in the conflict. What we have seen up to now has been mostly driven by the Gaza side, but now we have Hezbollah and the networks of armed, what we call terrorism, terrorists in America, basically Iran-sympathetic forces of all kinds sending kamikaze drones toward Israel. And we now have Joe Biden confirming that everything is going well as planned. In case you were wondering, are all the civilian casualties on the side of Gaza, are they intentional or not? Well, Joe Biden confirms the strikes are hitting just at the right place. The question will be, are the retaliatory strikes working? I mean, they're working in the sense that they're hitting the targets that they're seeking. Oh my God. Those were the targets we were aiming for. The entirety of the Gaza population. Damn Joe Biden. At least he's being honest about it. I love it. Even Blinken couldn't go as far as Joe Biden here. And he had to start saying, look, because of the pressure from the Arab side of the Democrat Party, because the Muslims are a force within leftism, you know, you can count on their votes very often. So there's starting to be a schism within the left in America, which is there is a lot of anti-war Muslim or Muslim-sympathetic people in America. And here you have Blinken brings a notable shift in U.S. language toward Israel as pressure mounts at home and abroad. What Israel went for, really, has not been seen in recent times. In recent times, and I'm talking about the mediatic age of war, so since the 1960s, I would say, there has always been an effort, a diplomatic effort, to at least try to present to the media community a positive interpretation, and most of the time a humanitarian interpretation of military action. I do not have in my memory any case of a democratic nation going to war and going in a genocidal war and just being upfront about it the way Israel was. they are trying to do war in a way that may have worked before the media age, but in the media age, at some point, the questions comes in and they get ridiculed even by their own side. You know, you expect a softball interview on something like CNN, but even the Israeli officials trying to answer to these interviews, they look terrible. They look bloodthirsty. And we've seen the bloodthirst throughout Twitter, throughout the social media. And so it's really a first. Spindly Opinion says, the balls on them. Yes, they had balls to really go in 2023 for just a straight out classical genocide type of war. But when U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken lamented the civilian death toll in Gaza on Friday, it marked a subtle but notable shift in U.S. language. And I agree. I had not heard this on the American side since the beginning of this. He says, far too many Palestinians have been killed. Far too many have suffered these past weeks, the top U.S. diplomat said in New Delhi. We want to do everything possible to prevent harm to them and to maximize the assistance that gets to them. To that end, we will be continuing to discuss with Israel the concrete steps to be taken to advance these objectives. Now, it's certainly not a plea of allegiance to Hamas, okay? But from an official U.S. diplomat, it is very interesting that they got to this point, because at this point it has become unsupportable to be blindly siding with Israel with open-ended commitment to them. At this point, even the big ally of Israel, which is the U.S. and Antony Blinken himself, they cannot sustain the total openness to what they're doing. We have horrific pictures coming out of Gaza right now. Civilians are trying to leave the northern zone and go south. However, Hamas opened fire on them to stop their attempt. They want human shields to protect them. That has been a claim that has been very present in this war. This whole claim that the people who are in the north of Gaza are stuck there because they are pressured to stay there or forcibly kept there by Hamas terrorists. I don't know for sure that this is true. It could be. It could also be a narrative of war. It can be something that the Israeli side likes to bring to precisely justify their strikes of civilians. Because then it's like, oh, well, we told them to get away, so we strike where we told them we would strike. And then, oh, why are they there? Well, it's not because they want to be there. It's because they are pressured by terrorists to be there. So they are human shields. Okay, possible, possible. So here we have the claim is that some victims are coming back from the road because they were on their way to get out of the north, but Hamas shut them. So you can see someone injured here, maybe dying. And here a car appears to be bringing back a victim of a similar shooting. A All right. So those are the claimed people being oppressed by Hamas and intimidated to stay in the north. John Drake says maybe some people just refuse to leave their homes. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's this. Then the question of whether there is this Hamas intimidation. I'm open to the hypothesis, but I also know that this only gets brought to justify Israel striking civilian areas. And so I'm not super interested in the propaganda value of this belief. I may be interested in the factual value of it. Meanwhile, American censorship is coming to the rescue because you don't want to let all of these young leftist undergrad students in universities start expressing their anti-Israeli views. And so Charlie Kirk reports, Columbia University has suspended Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace, a Palestinian activist group, a massive move by an Ivy League school. McCarthyism is back in force, but this time it's when you side against the Jews that it goes after you. Let's have a look at what they report.
Here in New York, they have seen many of these anti-Israel protests. Just now, the university has announced that they are suspending two student groups. One is called Students for Justice in Palestine, and the other Jewish Voice for Peace, which is a Palestinian advocacy group. Now, this school is writing the groups, quote, repeatedly violated university policy relating to holding campus events, and that culminated in an unauthorized event on Thursday that proceeded despite warnings and included threatening rhetoric and intimidation. So this is the first.
Well, threatening, I'd like to see the statements, because it does seem like the practice of free speech does not require a university license to make a protest where you have a Palestinian flag and you're just freely speaking your mind about the Palestine situation. It doesn't seem like this, now you may have a system for license application for meetings, but that doesn't mean that the students have to go through it by their First Amendment right. We have another event of censorship, kind of, where Harvard is evicting a black student from campus housing today for serving as a student safety marshal during a recent campus protest organized by Harvard PSC, the Harvard Undergraduate Palestine Solidarity Committee. So apparently this guy, all he did was volunteer because he is an approved safety marshal. So I don't know what that means. Does that mean that he walk around with a gun, or to the contrary, they may not have guns because they're on university property? But anyways, he walks around with some equipment, and the whole idea is this guy is an agent of peace, kind of replacement for a policeman, but in a less official manner. But he is approved as such by the university. But he defended the wrong side. He defended the side of the pro-Palestine. So he acted as a safety marshal for a pro-Palestine meetup. And there were some conflict. There was an aggressive individual who started attacking the pro-Palestine people. And he apparently, according to the thread, all he did really was follow his procedure to deal with aggressive individual. He tried nonviolent approaches to blocking the harm. So he tried chanting the word shame alongside other people of the crowd, shame on the person committing violent acts. So they try at first to have a nonviolent approach, and eventually he just kind of placed himself between the assaulter and the people he was assaulting. So basically he played a role of protection. That's what I retained from the thread. And there's no reason why he would be why it would be banned, but you know, universities are very much controlled by people who don't want to see a pro-Palestinian rise of an intellectual movement among the young generation supporting Palestine. Julia Hartley Brewer is a biased, ignorant British journalist. Julia is against a ceasefire, as you can see. She supports mass killing, massacres, genocide in Gaza. Let's listen to this conversation.
Who do you think has ceased?
Stray's channel says, was the Harvard student used as a human shield? That is kind of what a safety marshal is. It is a human shield, but who self-identifies as a human shield. It's a different thing. They decided to be a human shield. Well, let's listen to this woman.
Who do you think a ceasefire would benefit? Because the concern is, by those who are not calling for a ceasefire, including Keir Starmer and the Prime Minister of the...
I mean, already, if you're bringing the... There are concerns around a ceasefire. Already, I know what you're talking about. You are a warmonger. Like, there are lots of questions around, you know, should we really cease the fire? And I love the answer that this guy will give, but...
The Conservative government as well is that actually a ceasefire only benefits Hamas, who can reorganize themselves.
Okay, so a ceasefire is problematic because it gives them some time to rest, you know, it's... We want to put pressure on Gaza. We wouldn't want them to be able to breathe for a couple of days.
And then can continue their attacks on the Israeli civilian people. Do you think that actually a ceasefire will in any way benefit the ordinary people of Gaza?
Do you think that a ceasefire would benefit the people who are currently receiving bombs over their head and seeing their children being exploded by airstrikes? To what extent would they benefit from it? Good question. Big Daddy says, Julia Hartley, brouhaha.
Ordinary civilians, including children.
Well, ask yourself, how could a ceasefire not benefit children? She's even asking, she dares ask, would a ceasefire really benefit the children? Yeah, I think it would. Certainly, the children who get their legs blown up, the children who are dying, certainly it would help them, for sure.
Well, they're being massacred on a daily basis, Julia, at the moment. So, of course, a ceasefire would be beneficial to the people living...
This guy has to spit it out.
In Why are they
Gaza,
being massacred?
Which is, let's remember...
And this woman, I cannot believe, how dare she? She says, why are they being massacred? Did she say why, or did she say how? Because the how we know, it's through airstrikes. The why, I'm guessing if she said why, it is to invoke, oh, well, they had started it.
Well, they're being massacred on a daily basis, Julia, at the moment. So, of course, a ceasefire would be beneficial to the people living in Gaza,
which is...
Why are they being massacred? She is trying to suggest that there's a good reason to massacre them. And she just asked a question about children, by the way. Why are the children being massacred? Well, because maybe their parents or their uncle or their great cousins were part of Hamas and they made an attack against Israel, and now it justifies hitting onto the children? Is that what she's suggesting by this why?
Remember, which is, let's remember, is a concentration camp.
It's not a concentration camp.
Well, I'm sorry,
Julia. How dare you use that phrase?
She's trying to practice her Israeli offense at the suggestion that any other race of people, then the Jews could eventually be considered to have their individual rights violated by concentration camps. which is what Gaza is. I mean, historically, what is Gaza? It's this reducing portion of Israel in which there's more and more people and they are more and more oppressed. That's a concentration camp by any definition.
How dare you? Are Palestinians working gas chambers in Gaza?
Julia, what is...
Well, the definition of a concentration camp, you idiot, is not to be sent toward gas chambers. In fact, there are some historical books that, even as part of a description of the Holocaust, differentiate between death camp and concentration camps. Concentration camps playing the role of concentrating populations.
It's the definition of a concentration camp.
I'm just so appalled.
People are penned in. They
you
are not
seem
allowed
like
to
a
leave.
Normal person.
Nobody is allowed
you seem
to go
like a normal person with normal values.
Oh, now she invokes a reputational feminine perception. So I thought you were a normal person. You look like a normal person. So you don't have an argument. You don't know the definition of a concentration camp. So you're trying to ridicule this guy as being not normal. Well, I don't care about what a woman who doesn't even know the definition of concentration camp and yet takes offense at the use of the word that she doesn't understand. I don't care if you perceive me as not normal.
They have a fence around them. They are oppressed. They are regularly bombarded by the Israeli regime. What an absolute outrage. And how you can defend a regime which is behaving worse than Nazis, actually, in some respects.
Worse than Nazis. There we go.
Well, she called for this. I mean, if you were already treating him as if he had already said this, you were already treating him as... Oh, well, what about the Jews of the concentration camps of Germany? And so he has nothing to lose at this point. Yeah, worse than the Nazis.
Yes, absolutely. Because what we are seeing, thousands of children have been murdered by this Israeli regime.
Why don't we just say time? Why don't you just come on this show and just shout, I hate Jewish people, and save everyone time?
What do you say about the Jewish people then that have joined the rallies in some marches in support of a ceasefire, in support of the Palestinian people? What do you say about them, Julia? Because there are thousands of Jews who are utterly opposed to the Israeli regime.
There are thousands, tens of thousands of Jews in this country who are terrified about what is happening.
Okay, well, this is not super productive. Oh, well, there are Jews that think this, and there are Jews that think that. None of this is important.
People like you, who are basically saying you support terrorist organizations that don't think that Israel or the Jewish people have a right to exist.
The terrorist organization is...
Well, there's a difference between right to exist and right to bomb Gaza. Israel could exist. Could even be bold in its defense. But that doesn't give you the right to bomb civilian populations in Gaza.
It's the Israeli regime. They are the terrorists.
They're a democratically elected government. They're a democratically elected government.
So see the false dichotomy here. They are terrorists. Well, if I was to examine the word terrorist here and its use, and to question, is that a true statement? I would ask, what is meant by terrorism here? We're talking about terrorizing population. Terrorizing population through violence, threats, and militaristic means. Is it correct that the Israeli regime has been terrorizing the Gaza population? For sure. For sure, it is true. Sorry, I sneezed. For sure, it happened. And it happens every day. We see it. We see their terrorized faces as they carry the dead bodies of their children. So certainly the Israeli regime has been terrorizing the Gaza population. But she offers as an alternative, how dare you say terrorism? They are a democratically elected government. So she lays the foundation for the false dichotomy between you're either a terrorist or you're a democratically elected government. Has it ever crossed your mind, Julia, that you could be both of these things at the same time? Do you see any problem in the definition of terrorism that I just laid out, where it excludes democratically elected government? Don't you think that mobs, democratically elected mobs, can terrorize people? Because that's what the democratically elected government of Israel does.
They are not a prescribed terrorist organization, which Hamas is.
Because the Palestinians living in Israel have not got a vote. So don't give me that nonsense. Sorry, about...
There are plenty of Arab... If you're not an Israeli national, and there are plenty of Arab Israelis who are, you do have a vote in Israel.
Well, I'm sorry, Julia, you need to actually look that there are tens of thousands, if not millions, of Palestinians living in the area outside of...
So, yeah, it's not enough that there are some Arabs who have rights in Israel. Because, right, if I was to say, Julia, you don't get to vote in your nation, but there are some other women to whom I will give the right to vote, but not you. You certainly would be pissed. That certainly would be a violation of your right to vote as a woman. It wouldn't matter that there are other women in your nation that I've decided to give a special right to. And it doesn't matter that there are some Arab Muslims living as citizens within Israel. Okay, maybe their rights are respected. I don't know. Doesn't matter because the rights of the people in Gaza are not respected.
Of the outside of Gaza, who do not have a vote. And indeed, it's an absolutely apartheid regime. There's no doubt about
that. It's an apartheid regime. It's not an apartheid regime. I mean, for goodness sake,
in
what way? Israel is not an apartheid regime. There is nothing you can...
Hold on a minute.
Just talk nonsense.
Well, apartheid. What does it mean? It means the separation of a population with separate rights, and most often it is meant separate in the sense of less rights, in the sense of oppression. Is Israel an apartheid regime? Certainly. Certainly. They are treating Gaza with checkpoints. They are oppressing the populations in there. They are denying them elementary rights, such as passport obtention, rights to vote, rights to freely travel within the rest of Israel. And so certainly that's an apartheid regime by any valid definition of apartheid, unless you want to play the game of subjective labeling that here Julia Hartley Brewer is definitely trying to play. Well, what a pathetic performance. A very thoughtful appearance on French TV. It's in French, of course, so I'm going to have to translate it after, but I think that's a very sensical analysis of what's happening. And it's good that in France, there is kind of a free engagement on this. In France, the media is not that into defending one side of this story. It's kind of, in France, the media doesn't necessarily have much of a dog in this fight, and although you do have the very tendentious Israeli, you know, media appearances by people who are lobbyists for this cause, you get to hear very thoughtful analysis on French TV.
Un mot sur ce droit de se défendre d'abord. On l'entend beaucoup chaque fois qu'Israël est subi des attaques, le rappel de ce droit est opéré. Moi, je n'entends jamais le fait que l'autre partie a aussi le droit de se défendre.
So he's responding to the host who was talking about the right of defense of Israel, and he says, "I never hear this word being said for the other side. Every time you guys bring the right of defense, you are bringing it for Israel." But here there is an oppressed population, the population of Gaza, and I never hear that they have the right to defend themselves. Any act of violence they commit, you end up calling it terrorism. And I don't hear the fact that an oppressed population has the right, even through its most extreme elements, to defend themselves. That is a very important thing. That if you want to see the disbalance of the official American and mediatic position on this conflict, see how they are not willing to talk of the right of defense for Gaza. That everything they do will justify further strikes against them, further attacks against them. Iran warns of inevitable expansion of war after IDF conducts flag-raising ceremony in Gaza. So apparently the IDF was celebrating the conquest of territory, which is what this war has always been about. Israeli military official says Gaza is theirs. We returned. We were expelled from here almost 20 years ago. We started this battle divided and ended it united. We are fighting for the land of Israel. This is our land, and that is the victory to return to Ireland. I don't know if the flag ceremony should be taken as that significant, because it doesn't appear to be in a tactical point that is of any importance. Like, show me you can raise this flag at the heart of Gaza City, and maybe I would take it as some kind of victory, but you're planting your flag on some beach, bro. Yeah, so I don't know if this is indicative that Israel has won or progressed on any front. It may just be that the beach is not a tactical place to be for the forces that are defending Gaza. Pentagon is starting to restrict the flow of military aid to Ukraine as money runs out. No more green for Zelensky, with war funding for both Ukraine and Israel now seemingly snarled up beyond repair in Congress. On Thursday, the Pentagon said that funding delays have forced the U.S. to begin restricting the flow of military assistance to Ukraine, and the Pentagon has only $1 billion left to replenish stocks of weapons that were sent to the country, according to a spokeswoman. And this is a news that makes me appreciate the genius of Vladimir Putin. Because Vladimir Putin has been so slow on the Ukraine front. But when you think about it, it wasn't the right moment to advance on the Ukraine front. As long as Zelensky had this everlasting flow of American support, but now Zelensky will be very, he will be under tight constraints. Zelensky will have a hard time sustaining the front or making any significant progress against Russia. Now that suddenly the attention of the American Empire has expanded because of an ally that went too bold, basically. That is kind of genius to have led this war of attrition on minimal expense on the side of Vladimir Putin, because you could throw much resources as long as the American Empire was backing Ukraine. You would lose a lot, and you would just basically be throwing energy and Russian lives for nothing. And it would all be countered by Western mercenaries and their equipment and their drones. But now that Israel is draining a lot more attention from the Americans, the resources are suddenly divided, and there might be no resources left at all for Ukraine. We already had Zelensky a few days ago starting to beg, okay, we're not going to take money, but give us loans. We will pay back. Give us loans. I mean, that is the behavior of an addict on a gambling spree or in the need of his fix in drugs. So it's fascinating. You might have a weakening of the American Empire due to the boldness of Israel. Ultimately, you wanted too much too quick. And it's going to be interesting what develops in the coming years as we see the full strategy unfolding and the full war unfolding in this kind of World War III scenario. It may be that America doesn't have the resources anymore to be everywhere, to be causing trouble everywhere. And it may be at some point that their ally, Israel, is too costly of an ally to keep by their side. John Drake says, Germany is the biggest loser in this war. Really? I'm open to, I mean, for Ukraine, yes. For Gaza, do you mean for Gaza? Because I'd like to hear the argument. I'm not familiar with that argument. DK Shadow says, if not cash, just give us credit, bro. Yes, Zelensky, that is such an admission of the end of the current era. That Zelensky has to beg, that is good. I loved seeing it. Major legal victories on gun rights. So there is a Court of Appeal of the Fifth Circuit. There were two decisions. One was halting the ATF enforcement of the rule that redefines braced pistols as short-barreled rifles under the National Firearms Act. So just the idea that the pistols were attached to the forearm like this, this was considered somehow illegal, or this brace was considered an illegal addition. And very important decision. I think this is minor because who gives a shit about these braces, but I think it's good. But a very important decision that Fifth Circuit Court has halted a ghost gun ban, saying the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives does not have jurisdiction over personally fabricated firearms. Now, that is big. That is big. Because I like the argument. The argument is that basically a lot of the attack on gun rights is really attack on the commercialization of certain items. But there may be a deep American liberty, perhaps not to commercialize, because it's easy to justify legislation and red tape around commercialization. But as long as you make the gun yourself, you are really using your right to self-disposition that is deeply rooted in the law, alongside your right to have guns, which is also deeply rooted in the law. And then there may be no arguments left because then the federal government cannot presuppose that you're unable to 3D print your guns. The federal government shouldn't be able to impose on you that you have serial numbers on your guns. It's really between you and the gun and the constitutional rights that are protecting you. And you're not hurting anyone in commerce. You're not misleading anyone in commerce because you're doing these guns for yourself. So it's just a U.S. Court of Appeal decision for now. And it's just eliminating the preliminary injunction, such that ghost guns will be valid until a final court decision happens. But it's indicative of a very valid argument that could make it eventually to the Supreme Court and to the end of this case. And I love it. Stephen Robinson says, Sam Bankman's FTX has a gas token called FTT. It has pumped over 300% this month. Yeah, well, I think it was inevitable. It probably dropped so low that it would bounce back. And what we learned from these cryptos that die, they eventually come back. It's interesting. They eventually seem to make their way back. So it may be that crypto, the altcoins that are crumbling and crashing, some of them might have a second life. And it may be the case for the biggest ones of them. For some of them are really, they are killed by a governmental mismanagement of the whole lawsuit process and the kind of injustice. Now, I'm not going to start speculating on dead crypto. I'm just not, because I'm already mostly a Bitcoin maximalist. I'm already very shy at penetrating the altcoin market. I'm not going to, on top of it, start making risky decisions on cryptos that could have a second life. But I'm very happy for the people who enjoy these projects, you know. Luna is huge too. I believe that there was an attempt by this community of remarketing Luna or Luna C or Luna B. I'm not following the details of it because I see no interest in these crypto. But the fact is, perhaps some of these crypto have a second life to them. Big Mac Index says, JF, what do you think of Chainlink? It seems Solana and Chainlink went crazy during this ETF pump. Yeah, Chainlink is definitely a standard altcoin. It's one of those altcoins that you know is going to succeed. And it's been my position. Actually, Chainlink is the first altcoin for which I had respect. So Chainlink is good. Now, Chainlink, it's a whole approach of bringing oracles in a very layer one kind of old type of ways. So I, for one, believe that Chainlink is not the ultimate future 50 years down the line. But Chainlink has always been developing technologies that make the blockchain operate more intelligently and that allow expanded smart contract utility. So among the altcoins, it is one of those that has an actual purpose and function. It is very good. That being said, I believe that at the end of it, Chainlink, 50 years down the line, is not a serious crypto. Because I see things develop like layer 2, layer 3 kind of, you know, this whole expansion of the possibilities of smart contracts. And I see that eventually we will come to regard Chainlink as solving problems that are more efficiently solved in other ways. It's more efficient to do what Polygon does, to just make the blockchain so responsive, so low cost, that everything can happen on it. Whereas Chainlink is always on this kind of interface of building software over a very costly blockchain. Eventually, I believe that there will be a time where we come to see Chainlink as a dinosaur. But for the next 10, 15 years, Chainlink is a good option. it has a purpose, says John Drake. I'm long on Chainlink. Yes, me too, for the foreseeable future. Roddy Lucid says, I like to invest in Elvis Presley commemorative plates. Elvis plates' value will skyrocket when he makes his comeback. Risky bet, but ballsy. Very ballsy. Big Mac Index says, yes, I agree. Greater fool's theory. Buy any altcoin that pumped more than 28% this mini alt cycle. It means there is organic interest post-halving. Yes. I agree that we are in a mini alt cycle right now. We have seen ETH peak. Not peak in its whole history, but reach a local peak today or yesterday. So yes, I believe that we will have basically five steps until the peak of the Bitcoin bull run, and each of these five steps will be followed by a mini or a big alt season. So that's how you have to understand what is happening. We will have a rise of Bitcoin. Right now, we are still in a rise of Bitcoin. We will have a mini alt season. then we will have a bigger rise of Bitcoin. Then we'll be in a slightly longer alt season. Then we'll have another and another and another. And on the last, or the one before the very last, you will get the longest alt season, something like 2 or 3 months, perhaps, where the ratio of the alts will, of course, they will have already raised alongside Bitcoin. But eventually, their ratio will come in the positive with respect to Bitcoin. They will start gaining valuation with respect to Bitcoin. Because the whole system pours money down into Bitcoin. And then a portion of that money makes it to the Ethereum network. And a portion of that money makes it to the alternative chains like Polygon, Arbitrum, BSC. And all of this is a kind of trickle down, but the trickle down gets more intense as we get into the peak of the Bitcoin halving bull run. It gets more intense because people are fleeing. Yeah, people are fleeing the traditional finance world and are deeper and deeper into the web world, and they are going into more and more frictionless chains, and especially chains unlike Bitcoin, which allow ERC-20s to eventually rotate to USDT. What's interesting to me is that if you were to include the USDT last rotation of a Bitcoin bull run, where people have exchanged their BTC for ETH and they have exchanged their ETH for USDT, you would realize that there is a last peak of the Bitcoin bull run that actually happens many months after the true Bitcoin peak, which is the final flow of the energy from traditional finances toward USDT. In other words, USDT is the destination. BTC and ETH are intermediary steps. Frog Eyes says these alts only used to speculate on with little care about their technical workings or utility. It's why they're shitcoins and always will be shitcoins. And something like BTC is ultimate flight to safety / actually worth accumulating. Be very careful when you give away your precious BTC or ETH. Absolutely, I generally agree. However, it makes sense to sell at the peak and to buy a little more Bitcoin at the bottom. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, what I don't understand about Bitcoin's price predictably is you can't. What I don't understand about Bitcoin's price predictably is you can't. That sentence doesn't make sense objectively. What the fuck are you talking about? Big Mac Index says, Doubting Thomas, Bitcoin rises in 4-year cycles. If you match it with 2017 cycle, it fits almost perfectly. BTC rises first, then ETH runs in 2024. Yes, in general, just hold on to your Bitcoin, your ETH, whatever you have. It's time to freeze it, and don't worry too much about it. It's all going to gain in value, and you're all going to have your shot at a beautiful peak. BitTorrent pirates won't receive ISP warnings. It will be something worse. As part of its overall strategy to reduce piracy in the Netherlands, local anti-piracy group Brain announced a program to identify major or frequent uploaders by their IP addresses so that warnings could be sent via their ISPs. Under this system, user identities would not have been obtained by Brain, but after a local ISP refused to cooperate and Brain's request to proceed was denied twice in court, Brain had a decision to make. Spoiler, it's bad news for pirates. So basically, Brain's plan didn't require knowledge of the alleged infringer's identity. The ISPs would act as proxies, ensure the notices were delivered, leaving Brain to monitor BitTorrent networks for any signs of changes in behavior. They are going at all through all angles toward intimidating people away from piracy. But they've been doing this for years, and it's not been working. At this point, there's plenty of technologies available to the pirates, such as VPNs, and the bandwidths are so high that it's going to become increasingly hard to detect really where it comes from. If the pirates are careful enough, I don't think they'll be in trouble. Stephen Robinson says Poloniex hackers stole $100 million. $10 million of it was Hex. Oh, yeah, I've seen this. I've seen Justin Sun. Is it Justin Sun that was announcing that he wanted to pay a white hat fee to the hackers if they could return 95% of the money stolen? Yeah, I mean, these massive heists are happening. I've never dealt with Poloniex, and I will never have my money on there. But hopefully, Poloniex finds a way to reimburse these funds, because that is a massive amount of money. DK Shadow says they stole some Xen and dumped it too. Yeah, I mean, holding a whole big wallet with $100 million value in it, that is a massive security risk. And you better, to reduce this security risk, Bitcoin groups and companies and smart contract chain companies, they have the alternative of putting their funds, rather than in a wallet, put them in a contract. In a contract that is that has its rules, and that you know the rules are mathematically sound. And those are the only ways in which you can ever get the money out. So custody of funds for centralized custodians is a very, very dangerous activity to be in. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for being with me, and I will see you all tomorrow. Thank you.